Hello and welcome back to Big Sisters in STEM. This week we're joined by three amazing guests. We've got Humna, Emma and Dorsa. Humna is a fourth year medical student who has a special interest in computer science. And Emma is a clinical academic at the University of Manchester who specialises in the early prevention and screening of gynaecological cancers. And we have Dorsa, who is about 4 months from graduation in biotechnology. So let's go. So to get started, I kind of wanted to just talk about our journeys into education and to the subjects in which you've all landed in. If you were to turn back the clock, what do you think it was which made you think, that's definitely the route. I've decided that's how I want to get into something that can make an impact. Who wants to start?
I think it's always a little bit difficult to pinpoint one moment where the light bulb went off. I think it's an amalgamation of, like, over the years I was always quite active, doing so many different, like, extracurricular activities, working really hard, always the goody two shoes, like always the teacher's pet, and I just liked studying, I liked learning new things, and so I knew that I wanted to do something where I'm learning, where I'm just developing as a person, being with people.
Because you were really interested in computer science initially as well.
Yeah.
So were you really kind of driven by, I'm really good at these kind of STEM subjects? And then it was a kind of, which pathway do I choose? Or was there a passion for medicine initially?
I think I was very easily influenced as a child, which is a good thing in the sense that every single teacher that was a good teacher or any subject that had anything vaguely interesting, I would be like, wow, that's so cool. I want to know more about that. And that was the main thing with, like, computer science, medicine and physics.
Okay.
So those were the three that I was like, wow, I really could see myself going into any one of these three things only because the topics are really cool. Not necessarily, like, I was interested in them, so I worked hard for them. And so then I felt like I was good at them. But it all stemmed from a passion in those things to begin with, rather than, like, a natural inclination or a natural, like...
You sound like you were very curious, essentially, and then you fell into one of those passions, rather than being, like, one thing from the start. Is that right?
Yeah, I think so.
Also, you've also talked to me about really enjoying how biotechnology is physics and biology. So was physics also something that you were really interested in before university? Yeah.
Similar to you, I kind of, like, liked every subject. I was also kind of, like, the goody two shoes, did everything, tried to, like, dip my fingers and, like, dip my toes in every, like, little subject. And I always wanted to do something biology related, but the only, like, straightforward path that I knew about was medicine, especially having, like, my sister, she did medicine. So my parents were pushing for, if you want to do biology, you got to go into medicine. But I really wanted to do something that combined, like, all of my interests. I really like history. I really like English. I really like writing and technology and physics as well. And I kind of found biotechnology, and it was just, like, searching for something that combines everything. But also, I think in my journey of, like, finding what I want to do, COVID was really important. Yeah, it was very important. I was in my final year of school when COVID hit, and I was trying to figure out what to do. And with COVID on the rise and, like, vaccines coming out every other month to try and, like, cure and fix the problem, I kind of thought, this is something that's always going to happen. There are always going to be epidemics and pandemics and diseases. Biotechnology could be, like, a good, stable career. And it kind of, like, combines everything that I do enjoy. So that's kind of what I went for.
So it was a route, kind of, you saw something happening in the current world.
Yeah.
And you thought, how can I be part of helping that in a way?
Definitely, yeah.
I love that. Emma, what was it for you? Because you're very specialized now, but you went through medicine first. Kind of, were you kind of knowing the area you'd end up in now when you went to do medicine, or was it something you found along the way?
So I was smart, good at science, but really enjoyed writing and thought that there was a decision to be made there between doing a sciencey subject and a writing subject. But actually, now that I am at the stage of my career that I am, I realise that science is all about being able to write and tell a story. So it's fantastic I've been able to combine those two things. Mm. But I think as a young girl, gynecology and women's health was something I was interested in because I wanted to empower women. I wanted to do something where I felt there was a need. So women's health is often underfunded, under-researched. And I also had a real sense, you know, back in the day, most of the gynecologists were men. And I thought that that might be something to change, that perhaps a woman would prefer to have a woman looking after her. Mm. So I think all of those things came into play. But if I'm brutally honest, my teacher told me that there was no way I should ever consider being a doctor because I was a bit of a, well, different from you two. I was distracting other people and a bit not quite the goody two shoes. And I think she thought that there was no way I'd be able to work hard and actually finish medical school. So almost out of sheer stubbornness, I decided to prove her wrong. And that's why I did it. It's crazy, really. But yeah, I suppose that was an excellent comment from her because it pushed me on this path.
Not really a great thing to say to a child, though, is it? You should never be a doctor. You should never pursue what you want to do.
People love limiting other people. It's very interesting. So I've tried to not be limited by what other people think as I go forward, because there's no reason why we can't do things that we set our mind to. And actually, there's a bit about being smart, but a lot about hard work and perseverance and determination. And I think that sometimes that's forgotten.
Yeah, I completely agree. I was going to say, kind of, this, we've been talking about the things which got you into the areas that you're interested in and very passionate about. Have you found these things in your experience, kind of studying and working in these areas, which you wish people knew more about or perceived differently about your area? The idea of, for example, you saying, Emma, that writing is a huge part of science. That's not something that I think many people are aware of when they're choosing a subject. And it isn't something I would have thought was heavily involved in choosing medicine, for example. And must be good news to Dorset because you're so interested in...
I love writing. Yeah. I was very happy. I thought I had to give up literature, just like you said, like I have to give up writing. But it was such a big part of becoming like a bioscientist. I do so many written assignments and I will have to do so many written reports and projects in science communication. And it really excites me. It makes me really happy. I wish I knew that before so that I wasn't like so dreading going into just science.
I think it's a common misconception that you have to just choose one thing for your future. And whether you want to pursue two different things at the same time, that's possible if you organize your time and you push yourself to do those things and have people push you. For me, that's my sister and my mum. Like sisters in STEM, so like, come on. or whether you want to go on to create something new and create a new field, like maybe 20 years ago, like medical technology in regards to computer science and medicine being combined wasn't really thought of too deeply. We were still on paper notes and... But now it's a whole new ballpark with, you know, virtual reality, you know, new computer systems. Recently, Manchester's got a new system called Hive and everything's changing so quickly. So even if the two things you want to combine aren't available yet, either you can make them available or in 5-10 years, they will be there. So don't be afraid to just choose whatever things you're interested in and pursue all of them.
I think, yeah, there's a lot of crossover between subjects. I never thought that biology could cross over with AI, but AI is becoming such an important part of biotechnology, discovering new genes, formulating new processes to like get to solutions, and even music has crossovers with biology. Ooh. You can like examine, I can't remember what it was that I was taught, but it was something about examining the way that your body reacts to music or something about how your body makes music. It was very interesting.
Wow.
There's a lot of crossover.
That's the thing about science, is there's so much happening all the time and being developed. It's a very creative field in a lot of ways. And that's also a misconception, I think, that people think you go into creative or you go into STEM, but actually a lot of what you're doing is coming up with new ideas and finding ways to make that happen. I'm sure that's something that you're very familiar with, Emma.
Yeah, I think it's all about being creative. It's finding creative solutions to sticky problems, difficult problems, problems that other people perhaps haven't even considered looking for solutions to. So, for example, something that I'm really interested in at the moment is developing an at-home urine test for cervical screening, because there are many barriers to attending for cervical screening, including getting an appointment with your doctor, not really wanting to have an intimate examination that might be embarrassing, uncomfortable, painful. But actually, if a urine test was able to substitute for a routine cervical screening sample, then that might break down some of those barriers and enable more people to go for screening. So, but that's a creative solution to a problem that people didn't know we had, if you will, because in the UK, we have a great screening program. Mm. It works really well to prevent deaths from cervical cancer. It's just not everybody goes. So I was trying to find a solution to that specific problem.
Well, you were also looking at why don't people go? And if that's something that you can actually change. And sometimes it might not be something you can change. So there's problem solving at that stage as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely about being creative. So if you're a creative person who can write well, then science is for you.
That is the conclusion I've come to.
Yeah.
I love that. I love being creative. I love making new solutions and inventing new genes or inventing new plasmids that can do really like impossible things, but they're possible. It's so weird that you can just put anything into a bacteria to do whatever in some sort of system, and it's really fascinating. I didn't think that I could do that going into biology.
Really interesting.
It is, and you said making it sounds impossible, but it's not, and it does to me when you say that. I mean,
I was thinking you can do that.
you really can. You essentially can if you can make a sequence, which we can now. We can artificially make sequences, and you have a plasmid. You have like a bacteria or a fungus to put it in. You can do it. You can do anything. Technology is really making that possible.
You're really selling how interesting biotechnology is to me.
It is. It's such a great subject. I think it doesn't get the best love. I think there's a lot of people who don't know what biotechnology is. I get a lot of questions. What is biotechnology? And the answer is pretty boring. The actual definition, it's not that interesting, but it is basically just being able to do anything because of technology.
Mm. Within living systems.
Yeah, within living systems. Mm. That's the one important part of the definition.
I mean,
quite self-explanatory.
I think that medicine and the areas of science which you three are really in can be quite a daunting journey to somebody just starting out. Did you find that it was as daunting as maybe that kind of idea of it is, or do you think that there's the special ingredient that helped you along the way?
I mean, for me, it was about being enthusiastic in the moment about whatever it was I was doing and not concentrating too much on what I was hoping to become, but more focusing on, am I doing stuff that I'm really enjoying right here, right now? And since the answer to that was always yes, then I knew I was doing the right thing for me. And it's about little tiny steps. Like the journey is long, but little tiny steps will get you there. So I think it's about being, you know, determined to carry on doing something that's interesting and could benefit other people, for me at least.
I thought you were going to say stubbornness.
Again, being stubborn.
Remind yourself of what that person said.
Yes.
Fight.
What about you guys? Has there been, along your journey, has it been kind of as scary as you thought it would be? I know, Hamna, you've talked about baby steps before as well.
Yeah, I think... So in general, the journey to medicine, everybody knows, has a lot of steps. There's a lot of things to do, a lot of exams to sit, interviews to do. And then when you're in medical school... Oh yeah, this is quite something, right? Everyone tells you in high school or college, when you get into medical school, it's smooth sailing from there. No. And I think that's where the problem lies, and this is what we were talking about. That you always say, once I've done that exam, I'll be fine and I can calm down then. And once I get to that next point, I'll be okay. But that's not how like living life as an academic works, or even like as a medical student or as a doctor or anything, because
anyone
any field that you go into, there's always going to be that next goal. And so this is what we're saying, that you have to just like celebrate all of your mini goals, whether it's just at the end of the week you just finish that assignment and oh, that's amazing, like let me go and treat myself, or let me celebrate this and take this moment in as something really good. And also trying, like you were saying before, Emma, to enjoy the process. And if you're not enjoying the process, it's not necessarily that you're doing something wrong, but maybe you need to change something. Maybe you need to find a way to deal with the stress better. And like that's going to be an integral part of any part of your process in becoming who you want to become, if there even is an end goal, because there's not always there isn't always one. So yeah, just taking care of yourself, celebrating all the mini goals on the way, and then the big ones too when they come. But there's never, oh, once I reach that point, that's it for me. I'll be happy. When I become a consultant, I'll be happy. It's not how it works.
No, there's exams all the way.
Yeah.
It doesn't stop. As you say, the next challenge, the next thing you want to become a specialist in requires specialist training and so on. So you're absolutely right. We need to celebrate the mini wins. Yeah. Otherwise, we're waiting for the big win that never quite happens.
Yeah. Also romanticising your life on a daily basis.
Yes.
Is there any examples that you do on the daily that you think helps you get through the day and makes your... sort of what could be a stressful day seem more desirable to yourself?
If it's a stressful day, I'm just a busy girl in a big city.
Same.
I'm just living the dream, you know? I'm an academic. I'm a hardworking person, you know? You have to romanticize everything. And I genuinely do. It makes me really grateful for what I have. It makes me, like, remember all the blessings that I have, all the accomplishments I've made, and makes me... have a very positive outlook on life. It's very easy to be negative when you're being crushed by so much stress and so much expectation, just waiting for the next target to be hit. But when you're romanticizing your life, it's really helpful in like reframing what you're going through and putting it a very positive spin on it. I romanticize everything.
Yeah. Pull out my really aesthetic diary for the week and I'm writing down, you know, what I have to do, ticking stuff off.
That's sitting fine. In like a nice Hogwarts-like library doing my assignments.
If anyone's at University of Manchester, the purple zone is the best zone.
Yes,
it is. I haven't found it yet.
You will find it one day. It will come to you.
One day.
When I need it most.
You will find it. It will find you.
The purple section is the best. It just feels like you're in a film or something when you're in there.
Yeah.
I've looked. It's such a big library. I can't find it.
I'll take you.
I think it was really funny, Emma, that you brought up that idea of mini steps and things, because that's something which all three of you have really spoken to me about before, is kind of enjoying the journey as much as the destination. And Hamna and I especially have talked about how when you're kind of applying to uni, it's about getting the grades, it's about getting into that university, and then when you're there, it's about getting the grade that year, graduating with a 2-1 or a first, whatever your sights are on. And you can kind of think of things really kind of compartmentalized and kind of I think we talked about it being like a film when it ends, when the protagonist gets married. But you kind of think, like, I graduate and then I'm done. And that's really not how life is. There's always going to be goals. So you have to just, instead of being like, oh, I need to slog through and it'll be worth it, just enjoy the whole process.
Definitely.
And equally, when you look back at everything that you've done, I feel like there's an element of belittling, and you'll know what I mean in a minute. So when you think back to your GCSEs, doing that for the first time, it was the most stressful thing you've ever done, the hardest thing you've ever done. And then you do your A-levels and you look at the year 11s and you're like, oh, you guys have it so easy. But actually, when you were in their shoes, that was the hardest thing you'd ever done. Equally, you do your A-levels and then first year of uni, second year of uni, third year of uni. So you can't look back and think that what you did wasn't hard, because it was hard. You just grew as a person. Definitely. You just grew in your skill set, in your knowledge, in your ways of studying, knowing yourself, knowing how you deal with stress. So you need to look back and really feel sorry or appreciate how hard younger you worked to get to the point that you're at, because that was the hardest thing you've ever done. And equally, you might feel in the moment right now that you might not be able to get through this next exam. It's too hard for me. But you thought that 5 years ago. So,
and look at you now.
Yeah. So always just think that, you know, in 5 years, you know, I'll be doing something harder than this. But that's a good thing.
I think in a similar sense, you always have to remember that this is where you wanted to be. Like, 3 years ago, I was screaming, crying, praying, dreaming to be here. And I'm here and I'm so happy, but I always forget to celebrate that win, because I'm always looking for the next target. Like,
and okay, you're in it now.
I'm in it, yeah. And I always forget, like, I worked hard to get here. It's not just the next step, it's also what I've done in the past, all the hard work I put in, like 12 years of school just to get here. That wasn't nothing. It's not just like a stepping stone, that was a journey in itself.
Yeah. There's a lot of hard work that all of you have achieved to be in the places that you're in now. So it's always worth taking a moment to reflect and be proud of yourself. And I think it is very important to kind of romanticize our lives and enjoy the process. But equally, there is a sense of not taking on too much to the point. You have to recognize when you are at a point where you need to take a break. And I wanted to talk about that today with all of you being in areas where they're quite well known for burnout. We're kind of already on this topic now. We're kind of like skirting around it, like, no. But yeah, Emma, you especially, you're a mother of three. You're a professor gynecologist. You do clinical work every week. You spin so many plates. Is burnout something you've experienced? Does that stereotype come to be true? And how do you deal with it, if so? Is that something that you've just learned how to make sure you never fall into that trap? Or is it just always a journey?
I mean, I don't think I've ever been... I don't think I've ever actually gone through burnout per se, in that I've had to stop doing what I'm doing. But I certainly do get regularly overwhelmed with the tasks that I need to complete and the plates that I need to spin. And I suppose that is burnout. And I think that it's really all about making sure that you're not taking on too much, as you say. So most of us probably tend to accumulate things, roles, responsibilities, tasks, new things that we're finding interesting and taking on new challenges. But it's, I think, really equally important to remember to give up those things that you are no longer benefiting from, or that you've done for a short time. You've gained perhaps all the experience you're going to gain from doing that particular task, and giving that up, you know, maybe consciously delegating it to someone who in turn will benefit from that experience. So I'm thinking, like, if you're, you know, for example, in my situation, if you're, you know, an editor at a journal, you could do that for some years and really gain a lot of experience and really enjoy the process of understanding about peer review of scientific articles, writing, and so on and so forth. But after a while, you're probably not gaining that much anymore, But there's so many more things to do. It could be a reasonable time to say, do you know what? I've done that now. I'm going to hand it over to somebody else. So I think for me, it's remembering to sweep up the things, the crumbs of the of the tasks that, you know, I enjoyed before, but perhaps are no longer useful to me. And so that I have capacity to take on new things. So it's not being overwhelmed by things that are just becoming a little bit fallow because you just haven't given them up yet.
I love that advice. And it was unexpected to me, that idea, as well, of kind of accumulating so many things, because that is relatable in terms of responsibilities and projects. And the further along you go, the more you just have this trail of things behind you. And that is, if you can, I suppose, if you're in a position where you can decide, actually, that one isn't really serving me anymore, and somebody else could really benefit from it.
Yeah, I mean, it's that sense
kind of empowering someone else as
exactly.
well.
Exactly. And
because
it's become a burden for you, you don't realise that for somebody else, it's an amazing opportunity. And the more that I have delegated out and had the sort of response from those people, wow, thank you so much for thinking of me, I'm so excited. And them taking on that role with excitement and renewed kind of vigour that you no longer feel for that task, it's actually a win-win.
That's such a good perspective. I'd never thought of that. I feel like I have so many like responsibilities and roles piling up. I never realized that I could just let them go.
Yeah, and give them to someone who's going to benefit.
Yeah, definitely.
And because they're so excited by the opportunity, are really going to throw a lot of energy and resource into this thing that you perhaps have lost enthusiasm for a little.
Yeah, just putting like half your effort in.
Yeah. It's really interesting you say that. Oh, yeah, half your effort. Okay. I think that's what my sister always tells me. It's better to put 60, 70% effort in for an outcome if 100% is too much. You'd rather give 70% on all of your different tasks that you have to do than give 100% in each of them and end up just failing yourself because you can't handle that much. You can't deal with that much. And equally, it's like you were saying before, we are where we wanted to be. You know, we were working, crying, praying to be where we are now. And I think there's always an element of sit back, remember why you wanted to do this in the first place. And with burnout, you forget. You forget
become
what
untethered.
The passion was like initially. And for me, it was after the first 2 years of uni, it was very theoretical, science-based. As soon as I entered third year and I started going on placement and being in the hospital, my energy came back. I was like, this is why I wanted to do medicine. I'm speaking with patients. I'm being with the doctors. I'm part of the team. And I'm like, yes, this is the medicine I wanted to do. This is the medical student I wanted to be. And it sort of came back. And, you know, I think it's really, really beautiful. You have to just, you know, remember what brought you in the first place. Why are you doing this? Why are you putting so much effort in? Yeah,
a change is as good as a break sometimes, isn't
Definitely.
It? Shakes it up a little bit, gives you a new perspective, a new thirst for these activities. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I agree with that.
That's a really good point, because I have been dealing with some burnout myself recently with my final year. It's very stressful trying to like do everything at once. There's always another deadline, a post-grad deadline, a job application deadline, internship deadline, scholarship deadline. There's just so much to do on top of your regular work and all your extracurriculars, and it's a lot. And I've been feeling some burnout, but I don't want to take a break, because the way that I am personally, I don't do well with breaks. I think some people
what do you mean
breaks.
By this?
I feel very purposeless when I take breaks.
Okay.
And I feel like I fall into like a rut, and emotionally I can't handle breaks. I don't know if it's some unresolved emotional issues or what, but I don't like breaks because I feel like I'm not doing what I could be doing. I'm not fulfilling myself. And I have so much like young energy that I want to get out and put into the world. So I feel like this is a very good perspective, a change rather than a break.
Yeah.
I will be implementing that now.
Yeah, I think it's really good.
Yeah.
I was going to mention as well that both Hamna and Dorsa have older sisters. So you actually have big sisters. And Hamna, is your sister in STEM at the University of Manchester as well?
She is indeed.
So that must be helpful. Does she give you advice?
She does. Okay. So my sister also studies medicine. and she's in the year above me at the moment. She is amazing. Even so, she has for many years gone out of her way to help as many people as she can, and that's me included. I feel like she has so many younger siblings in STEM because she just is that type of person. And I think she sort of inspired that in me as well. Like, I wouldn't be here. I wouldn't be, I suppose, interested in as many things as I'm interested in, doing as many, you know, extra things as I am, if it weren't for my sister being like, oh, you know, there's this new opportunity I saw. You should do it. And then when the deadline's coming, she's like, oh, you know, go on.
Give yourself some credit, though. I think, like, you would be interested in so many things, but having her means that you maybe find things quicker than you would have done on your own, maybe.
Definitely.
A catalyst, if you will.
Yeah.
Yes. That's a good biological word.
You can tell we have a biotech. But yeah, I love that. I love that she has been so proactive, and you've told me about this before, how she brings opportunities to you that she thinks you'll enjoy. Like you did Code First Girls, because she mentioned that to you and things.
Yeah, and I think that goes back to the burnout thing. What was really surprising, fourth year is apparently the hardest year of medicine, and it's when you need to know the most, when the exams are the hardest, and it's just very intense, especially at UOM.
I love how you say, apparently, being in fourth year yourself.
I say that only because...
She hasn't done fifth year yet.
Exactly.
I feel like you took the words out.
But this is going back to what I was saying earlier, that like, this is the hardest thing I've ever done, right? But I'm doing it. And majority of people pass fourth year. So it can't be impossible, right? And in my first semester of fourth year, I was doing Code First Girls. I was attending a religious class at the uni. So that's two evenings a week. I was doing an additional module as well as medicine. So that was three nights a week, 2 to 3 hours of classes. And then I was, you know, working out more. And I was doing a lot more than I've ever done, but I was doing so much better for it. So even though I thought, oh, there's no way I can be exercising, there's no way I can be doing all of these things and medicine, it's just too much, it's too overwhelming. But come fourth year, the hardest year, I'm doing way more than I've ever done, and it's benefiting me. So sometimes you can do more than you think you can, and it's beneficial to you. I don't know how that happened. I mean, it was hard. It wasn't easy. But I think mentally I was doing way better.
I always tell people, if you're struggling with time management, don't cut back on responsibilities, add some. Because that's going to force you to take the time manage so much better. And I think that's true. It's worked for me. I've noticed that when
you are the same person who said I don't do well with having a break.
Maybe don't take advice from me. But from personal experience, in my first year at university, I didn't do well at all. And I attribute that to not having any responsibilities and purpose outside of my degree. I didn't have any extracurriculars. I didn't do much at all. I didn't have that extra life outside of academics. But then in my second year, I did so much and I did so well. I was a content creator. I was a volunteer. I was a past leader. I was doing like three different societies. I was doing so much. I was working out for the first time. And second year went amazingly. And I think when you have so many responsibilities, so many things to do, to like a reasonable human limit, I think you manage your time so much better.
And you get better perspective as well, don't you?
Yeah.
Because you're having a break, a change that is something that's good for you physically, something that's good for you creatively, something that's different to focus on. And that means when it comes to the work, that's okay. You feel like you've earned, you know, you've had your break, as it were, and now it's time to knuckle down, do some work.
Exactly.
It does give you that.
So all three of you agree that a good way to help you deal with things like getting overwhelmed with your work is having another purpose. That's so interesting. And how
take something else on. When you're overwhelmed, do more.
Trust me.
The extra thing can be something for yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So one extra thing I took on at the end of last academic year and this year, You're going to laugh, but it's gaming. So my brother got me into gaming and it's just been amazing. It's the best thing. I go home and I play a minimum of 1 to 2 games, which are half an hour to 45 minutes long each. And it takes my mind off of things. Mm-hmm. I can wind down. And when I go to bed, I'm like, yeah, I had a great productive day. And then I had a rest. And now I'm going to bed. And, you know, I just feel calmer. I feel it's a good thing, but it's an extra thing. But it's for myself.
Depending on what games you play, it could be a stress relief as well. If you're playing a battle royale, you might like relieve some anxiety from the day.
Yeah, Stardew Valley. No, I think that's a really good point. And gaming's a good example as well, because that takes focus. So you're actively not thinking whilst doing that, because you can't be thinking about something else whilst trying to focus on whatever your goal is in the game.
Yeah.
What games do you play?
Valorant.
I play PUBG.
Oh, nice!
Similar game.
Yeah.
I'm really old school and I still play Assassin's Creed Odyssey, even though it's like maybe a 7-year-old game. Just because you can wander around ancient Greece. It's the coolest.
I'm sold.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
I love ancient Greece.
My boyfriend always laughs at me because I'm on there with my controller every couple of seconds just taking photos. And then at the end of gaming for like an hour, I just look through the gallery of pictures I've taken.
I do that too. I go to like scenic positions on the map, take some screenshots.
Same. My favourite is when other people online like my pictures.
Ooh. Ooh.
I just take it as I'm the photographer of the gaming world.
New career prospects.
Yeah. But yeah, I really like this point essentially of not something you've said before is not undervaluing your own time. Tying yourself away to kind of like your existing commitments all the time.
We value everyone else a lot and their time. So I go to the library and I'm going there to meet my friend. And if I don't go, I'm going to let her down. Or, you know, I'm going to a class and I have to be there for my sign off, you know. But going to the gym, if I don't go, no one's going to say anything. But if you don't value yourself and give yourself the same level of like respect that you give other people, then you aren't going to be doing as much for yourself, you know, and just making sure that you value your own time as much as you're valuing anyone else's, because, you know, it is just as important. You aren't less than anyone else, you know?
That's a good point.
Keeping to your commitments. Yeah. I like that. It's kind of reminds me as well of earlier, Emma, when you were talking about a sense of stubbornness. And has that been a thread throughout your career as well as when you were finding where you are now? Is that kind of your guiding light almost being your own determination?
Yeah, I mean, I really think so. So I'm, as you said, I'm a professor of gynecological oncology, which means I spend half my week doing cancer surgery and the other half of my week doing cancer research. And that's quite a difficult career choice because it's being really good at two quite different things. And a lot of people told me that it wasn't possible, that it was impossible to become a clinical academic in a surgical specialty, because how can you possibly be an expert surgeon and also be good at research? Mm. So a lot of people said I couldn't do that. And then when I made it clear that I was going to have a family, again, a lot of people said, well, you can't possibly be a clinical academic with children. So lots and lots of people trying to limit me along the way. Very few female role models that I could see in the position that I aspired to be in. And, you know, I'm a firm believer of if you can see it, then you can be it. And that lack of role models was another thing that really inspired me to try and do this, because there are so many talented women who want to have families but also have a clinical academic career.
Yeah.
That I wanted to inspire and say, look, you can do this. Nobody should limit us. So I think definitely being stubborn and determined and not letting people say what I could and couldn't do has been a thread throughout. Yeah.
They're definitely not mutually exclusive events.
No, of course. But, you know, people, because they couldn't do it,
yeah,
assume that you can't do it. But just because they can't do it doesn't mean you can't do it. And actually...
Or just because it hasn't been done before.
Exactly. So, you know, we are in a much more gender diverse world. There are more women who are reaching, you know, professor level within the clinical academic career pathway. And, you know, we want to build on that and encourage as many different people from different walks of life to achieve the top of their career, because it's only by having that kind of inclusive future that we can understand all perspectives and see, you know, as many different ways of doing things as possible. So it's not about just one type of person ever getting to the top of their profession. It's about it being available for everybody. And that's the kind of ethos that I'm trying to build in my group and trying to encourage from people from all walks of life to realise that if they want to do it, then they can.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting as well, that idea of being told, oh no, that's impossible because it's not been visible or visibly possible before. That can be taken one of two ways. You can take it in the way of, no, I'm going to prove that person wrong. But a lot of people don't. And especially if that's coming from all angles of your life, if you don't have a big sister or a parent or a partner or kind of peers who are kind of hearing and validating what you want to do, I don't know how easy it is to kind of stick to that dream.
I mean, I think for me, it was having that as a sort of background aspiration, but really it's going back to that thing of enjoying every day and enjoying what I'm doing right now and realising that in this moment, I'm making the right choices for me and not getting bogged down by, well, will I ever make it to this dizzy height of professor? You know, will I ever achieve a family and a clinical academic career? Will I ever be able to be a surgeon and a researcher? So not getting bogged down with those things and much more thinking, okay, this opportunity looks really exciting for me. I'm going to do that. And really just keeping the horizons a little bit closer. Even though
the mini steps.
Yes. Even though knowing what the kind of global aspiration will be, it's really about thinking, what will I do today? What will I do next week? What's my plan for 3 months' time? And really breaking it down into the mini steps.
How important do you think it is to kind of, with your group now being mostly women, that kind of sense of creating a safe community where people can see that opportunities are available to them? How important it is, do you think it is to like find that community?
It's really important. It's, I mean, we can't do anything on our own nowadays. It's all about teamwork. So, you know, having a team that works well together is absolutely crucial, I think, to running a group. We don't want to have a group where people are competing with each other. We want to have a group where people know what the vision is and are all working together in, you know, in the ways that they can with their skill set to reach that goal. And that's all about, you know, encouraging people from every, you know, walk of life that would be interested in this area in taking part. You know, it's not about just having one type of person. You really do need a disparate sort of skill set. You need people who are good with people. You need people who are good with numbers. You need people
who are good at writing.
Yeah, who are good at writing. So you need this range of different individuals to make, you know, a team. And so I think for me, it's been about not having blocks in who can be part of the group, but really encouraging anybody that comes to me that, you know, this is something that they can do if they want.
Dorsa, I was going to ask if that was something that you relate to, because I know you're a PASS leader, which is peer assisted study sessions. Sessions?
Yes.
Yeah. It's the sessions that always throws me off. So I think
study
it's
sessions scheme. Yes.
Yeah.
PASS scheme. Yeah.
So you're a PASS leader, which means that you kind of get to mentor people who are in the year below. I don't know, is it younger than that? Is it just the year below?
So I was a PASS leader last year.
Yeah.
Now I'm a PASS coordinator. I've climbed up the hierarchy.
Oh, well done.
Thank you. Yeah, so as a PASS leader, it was really nice, because what a PASS leader essentially does is you take in a batch of first-year students, so people who have just been in the position that you've been in, freshly coming from a gap year or from a work experience that they took before university or just from school, and you kind of guide them into the transition from the life they had before to university life. And you tutor them sometimes with subjects that they have. You offer them general life advice. You signpost them to different university services. And it's a really valuable position. It's quite an easy role. I think it doesn't get taken very seriously, but it is very valuable to be a past leader because you get to connect with people. And that connection, it lasts like the entire 3 years that you are there.
And it's at such an important time when you're transitioning into coming to uni.
You're kind of responsible. Yeah. You are responsible for like influencing them and what they choose to do in their first year. I think I took kind of like a fear-mongering tactic. I told them, I didn't do well in my first year. You guys should do this, this, and that. But also, I was quite kind and supportive. I'd like quite to think. Kind.
I also scared them a bit.
I also scared them a bit. I think tough love. It's important, but I'd like to think that I was very supportive as well. I think I'd like to think that I made an impact on quite a few of the students.
You definitely will have done.
I hope so.
Especially when you say that those relationships have lasted. I mean, that's so positive and just shows that that was a really valued thing at the time for them.
Yeah, and also climbing the hierarchy of PASS, becoming a PASS coordinator, and like taking those relationships with you. They become past leaders and you can depend on them to do things, and you can see that the influence you exerted onto them becomes exerted onto the people that they influence in return. And it's quite nice. You leave like a fingerprint in the university with your influence.
And the multiplicity of that. Yeah. I mean, it just keeps growing, right?
Yeah, it's a little bit scary now that I think about it. But also really, really nice.
Yeah.
I love that idea of a fingerprint in that you're leaving behind.
I think that's what I've been trying to do all uni. Like all of my experience, I've just been trying to make my mark here.
Nice. So I have been shown by Alice that it's time to wrap up. So we have one last question that everybody answers when we have these chats, and that question kind of ties quite nicely into this conversation that we've been having actually about kind of nurturing communities and those who have gone through or are going through what we've already been through. And the question is essentially, if you could tell yourself one thing 5 years ago, what would that be? And it could be something that you think has better prepared you for life since then, and that can be small or big.
I mean, I think for me, it's about this kind of perspective and realizing that a very stressful moment, mm-hmm. in the fullness of time will not be quite anywhere near as stressful. And just being very chilled and very relaxed about things that you could get emotionally het up on, mm-hmm. And could actually detract you from what you're trying to do. So just taking a step back, realizing that this day will pass, tomorrow will be a better day, and not letting the stress of that moment overwhelm you.
I would probably say that life goes on and change happens very organically. Like, you don't have to take steps to change life. Things can change instantaneously, and you will never be prepared for it, but you'll adapt to it, and that's fine.
Great.
Oh my god, I'm after that. Oh my god. if
you were to ask me 5 years ago, I'd be like, oh, try not to stress about things too much. And now I'm like, no, forget that. I think now I would say to myself, you need to learn the difference between, as in me 5 years ago, learn the difference between what's anxiety and what's stress. And the anxiety is not good, but a little bit of stress pushes you along. You know, you need a little bit to, you know, get to where you need to be. And instead, work on finding active solutions to stress. You can't think, oh, I'm gonna relax. And your relaxation, it could be scrolling on Instagram, which is fine. But doing something actively that takes your mind into something that's active but calming, you know, like gaming or reading or something that's keeping you engaged, or, you know, working out, for example, something that needs to, you know, actively removes that stress from your life. Yeah, and I think surround yourself with people. I think I was really lonely in my first year of uni because of COVID. It was really hard to meet people, hard to just be around people in general and make new friends. So surrounding yourself with people and finding ways to deal with stress, I think, are two main things.
Some really good advice. I've really loved this conversation today. I hope you guys have enjoyed it too.
Yeah, thank you so much for asking me.
Thank you for having
us. You.
We should do this again. But that's it for today. So thank you for joining me. As I say, I think you've all given some really useful advice there for me too. And yeah, that's it. And see you next time.